With me now to talk about this some more, NPR's national security correspondent Greg Myrie and NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Good morning to you both.
Hey, Lulu.
Good morning.
All right, Greg, I'm going to start with you. President Trump gave remarkable detail about this raid. What did you hear?
Right. So it was these eight helicopters coming in. It was more than an hour flight. And because this is not an area where the U.S. traditionally operates in the far northwest of Syria, it was in dangerous areas where Russia, the Syrian military, the Turkish military.
An active military zone.
Absolutely.
A lot of people fighting.
So they were given advance warning that the U.S. was coming in on a mission, but they were not told what that mission would be. When the helicopters did reach this place, it appears to be a small village called Berisha. They blasted through the walls of a compound. They took fire. They went into the compound in search of al-Baghdadi. They chased him down into a tunnel, a dead-end tunnel. There were people killed from the al-Baghdadi compound, but no Americans were killed. And as they approached al-Baghdadi, he apparently blew himself up and also killed three of his children. No U.S. casualties aside from a canine, according to the president.
All right, Tam. The president's language was pretty vivid. Here's how he described al-Baghdadi's death in a tunnel.
He didn't die a hero. He died a coward, crying, whimpering, screaming, and bringing three kids with him to die. Certain death. And he knew the tunnel had no end. I mean, it was a closed end. They call it a closed end tunnel. Not a good place to be.
Tam, how else did he talk about this raid?
He used really quite graphic terms to describe it. He said that Baghdadi he died like a dog. And the president said that he even hoped that maybe some of this would be seen by other ISIS fighters so that Baghdadi would lose some of his, so that he wouldn't be seen as a hero. President Trump kept emphasizing how Baghdadi brought those three children with him into the tunnel. The remarkable thing about this is simply that the president of the United States, he delivered a statement and then he took questions for another 40 minutes going into very specific details about the operation, about how he was able to watch it from the Situation Room.
Who was in the Situation Room with him?
Yes. Who was in the Situation Room with him? How long the flight took for the helicopters to get to the mission? How long, you know,
what were the sensitive conversations with some of the players like Russia and Turkey and how that was negotiated? I mean, it was astonishing.
Yeah, how they did the DNA testing to identify that it was in fact Baghdadi, that they had to remove debris to get to his body. He was really walking the American public through his experience in a way of watching this play out from the Situation Room.
Greg, do you have thoughts on that? I mean, it really was detail that we normally don't get.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you make the comparison to the bin Laden raid where President Obama made a few brief remarks, and then more stuff eventually came out and movies were made and books were written, but very sparse information to begin with. The president seemed to have no hesitation. There were only a couple small items that he declined to mention. He wanted to talk about it in as much detail as he could.
Which is sort of remarkable because President Obama had been criticized. The Obama administration had been criticized for too many details coming out about that bin Laden raid.
So, Tam, I guess that makes me ask the question, why? Why do you think that he wanted to hold the microphone for so long and discuss it in this way?
This is President Trump. This is the Trump show. And President Trump wants this victory, and he wants to own it himself. Let's put this in the context of what's happening right now. He has been getting very severe criticism from members of his own party for weeks now because of his decisions in Syria to pull troops back, to allow Turkey into a space where U.S. Kurdish allies have been. The president has had one catastrophic news cycle after another related to Syria, related to wanting to hold the G7 at Doral and having to reverse that at his own resort. That was just a week ago. And of course, there's been this drumbeat of the impeachment inquiry with bad headlines coming out every single day. So of course, President Trump wanted to hold court on this. This is something that doesn't have the same downsides so much of the news does for him.
Greg, a quick question. We've heard from the region, the people who are fighting on the ground saying ISIS isn't done. There are still sleeper cells. They could reconstitute. This isn't the end of the fight. But that is not the impression that President Trump necessarily gave.
No. In fact, he seemed to say it reinforced this commitment, this ongoing effort that the terrorist groups and ISIS in particular have been wiped out. And more to the point, I think he said, I'm not rethinking my decision to take these 1,000 or so American forces out of Syria. He's going to leave some contingent to guard oil, but not apparently, to be specific, going after ISIS or on a specific counterterrorism mission. So he saw this as a great success, but not something that's changing his overall view of how he should address the region.
Well, I want to ask about that other thing that the president brought up, securing the oil. Let's talk about that. He said that U.S. forces could be there to secure some oil at Syria, and that the U.S. could take that oil and even give it to a U.S. company like ExxonMobil to exploit.
This is Syrian oil. It's in the land of eastern and northeastern Syria. It is not U.S. oil. It's not to be grabbed or taken. International law is very, very clear on that. Also, it's not worth that much. I mean, it's enough when it was operating at full capacity before the Syrian war. It met Syrian needs, and there was a little bit left over. ISIS was able to eke out a little bit and export that. Those fields are still there, but it's not operating. And they're out in the desert. Very easy to fly planes over. If you saw anybody trying to, it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars to repair these fields and get them working again.
That's NPR's national security correspondent Greg Myrie and NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.